you weren't some miracle guy or some miracle company thing. It just keeps destroying everybody. He's still a private, you know, privately held company, just doing his own thing.
5 years in the Marine Corps, I led interrogation teams and developed informants. That doesn't translate right into maybe an HR or something that translates. We had a run where it was 7+ years of 30%+ organic growth, right? But now that we've surpassed 100 million in that market, we've realized like we can't sustain 30% growth in a market like St. Louis. Once we're at this scale, 30% becomes a lot harder, right? To add a $30 million chunk to your business in a year. So that's part of the reason we went to Nashville. That's why we acquired in Denver. We got 130 team members up there. So we said, how do we get into these markets that have wind at our back, where there's a ton of population growth? There's a lot of favorable dynamics in the market. So that's where we want to start, are the things that are high impact, low effort. And then we work our way down that list to the high impact, but high effort stuff. And so, we got to balance, because at the end of the day, you only got so many change points. I can't go into this business and blow up 100 things at once, right?
Because it's not some secret sauce. You're just like fucking go mode constantly.
This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up To The Point, listeners? It's your boy, Chris. How you like that intro? Just something about looking at the screen and seeing Chris Hoffman just makes me want to talk like this.
That's the hairline. It does it to my wife, too.
Hairline, dude. I mean, you can dock a couple boats there, buddy. I like it. I mean, that's the gift that keeps on giving. We are excited to have our friend Chris Hoffman on the podcast today. Guys, it's an exciting day. I know you guys know this because we're buddies. We have personal relationship. Today's a good day in the Rhino world. Now, though this is coming out, you know, at the beginning of June, today is actually May 7th that we're recording this, and the official announcement that my gorgeous, smart, intelligent wife is the president of Rhino Strategic Solutions and taking over all of day-to-day operations to lead us to the promised land. And I am so pumped for it. And I appreciate your guys' support, because you guys know incredibly talented she is. But it's a good day to be a Rhino. I'm excited for her to take control and lead us, like I said, to the promised land. It's exciting. I'm glad it's not your boy. It's Anna. She's doing all this stuff, which you guys already know. Really, it was her that ran it before. So having her step back in and being able to take over leadership is a big deal. And we're excited about that. So I flew in here, like not literally, but I drove in here really, really fast, because I was over at a conference before I got here. Have you guys ever heard of, I hadn't never heard of this organization until like maybe a couple years ago. Have you guys heard of Blue Collar Success Group? Chris Crew, Kenny Chapman. Have you heard of those guys? Okay. I didn't know who they were till a couple years ago. And then they're having an event here over by the Cardinal Stadium. And so, I just went over there to meet with Chris and Kenny and introduce myself, say hello, and watch, Ryan, Kettering speak, who's, the CEO of Prolific Brand Design, who I was able to just partner with. So I was able to acquire 60% stake of the business. And I'm excited about it, because at Rhino, we've probably used them 30 or 40 different customers of ours have been super successful. And then Chad and I leveraged his branding for our roofing company, Redbird Roofing, and the drone business. I've used them for, so like, not only am I a user of Prolific, I'm a fan of Prolific. Okay. So I thought, why not just, you know, pull a Ken Goodrich and buy the business. And so that's exactly what I did. So it was exciting to kind of go and be a part of it, and as being there as Prolific versus Rhino, a little bit weird, but it's an exciting day, boys. It's an exciting day.
And congrats to Anna. That's huge. That sounds exciting. Yeah. Sounds like it'll be a great, great next chapter.
Dude, so pumped for it. You know what? Chad's going to be really disappointed today, Chris, because part of me coming in here last minute was I forgot my damn dad jokes.
Well, thank God.
So I don't have them to share, which is unfortunate, because I know how much you love him, and I just disappointed you today. So there's my one black eye for the day, as I forgot my dad jokes. Unless Hoffman's got some. I'm sure he's got it, but I don't know if he could actually tell them on air.
No, I love dad jokes, but I don't have a good Rolodex of them.
Yeah. I always wanted to be that guy who could, like, everybody knows that guy who just rolls jokes off like the tip of his tongue. My what a good friend of mine, his dad was always that guy. Hey, I got a joke for you. I got a joke for you. Like, I was like, how do you remember all this stuff?
Oh, Pete, you jokester. Well, we're excited. We got our buddy Chris Hoffman on here, CEO of Hoffman Brothers over in St. Louis, Nashtucky. How much time do you actually spend over there, Chris? Do you go over there very often over to Nashville?
Not a lot. I've got, so that there's some great ops leaders there, and they work directly with my brother, Joe. So I'm probably down there once every other month or so, meeting with the team. And but really, they I think they like me out of their hair. They're doing a great job running that thing.
You said hair, and I'm going to let that one go this time. Okay. It was a nice little segue for me. So you're staying pretty much in the loo. And by the way, I mean, listen, you got a farm you got to take care of too. So like that shit's a lot of extra work that you didn't necessarily, you knew it was going to be some work, but did you really know it was going to be this much work?
Yeah. Still, unfortunately, still a lot of travel, but just not to the Nashville operation. But I actually ran into your guys' GM at Redbird. We never got to connect. We happened to be in Florida at the same time in Miami. And he shot me a note when I posted something and we were staying at the same hotel. And he goes, if you've never met before, you're not going to believe this. And he sent a picture in the hotel lobby. And he's like, I'm here. And we couldn't end up connecting, but that's kind of funny. Small world. Shit.
That is random. Huh. I'll be damned.
Small world.
Chad, who the hell did you run into when you were down in Mexico? Who was that? I forget.
Trey McWilliams.
Oh, Trey McWilliams.
We're in a, that's right. We're in a pool. And I'm like, I feel like I know that guy, but this would be really awkward in Mexico at a random resort to go up to somebody and think I knew him. So we made some like awkward, like, eye contact, like kind of sizing each other up. Like, I think we know each other. And then, they ended up being at the same place, randomly. I was there on my wife's work trip of all things, like just some random trip that we were taking.
Work trip at the nudist colony.
That's right.
Awkward. Trey, it's cold in here, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get after it. So a couple things we're going to hit on today. And listen, I'm going to give credit where credit is due. Because I was been a little busy these last few weeks, a lot of things happening, and not that all of us aren't busy, but today, you know, I typically have a time where I do some prep for this podcast, and because we're all buddies and we have a lot of these conversations, like this should be a pretty easy one, but usually I prep better than I did, and I said, Chad, I need to tap you in, buddy, because I have not prepped at all for this particular podcast, and Chad stepped up, and he has helped us figure out what we're going to talk about today, so Chad, by all means, kick us off. Just let the listeners know, man, what we're going to hit on today, and then we're going to jump right into some topics.
Yeah, so I think we're going to talk, we think this episode will release kind of early June. So I think, talking about how people are preparing for the busy season. I think in most areas, or at least the ones that Chris and I are in, is Memorial Day is kind of the kickoff to all things busy season. So we're going to talk about that, like what our thinking is, what we're making preparations for. I think talking about, Chris and I were at a roofing conference. What was that? Looking at my calendar, it was a couple weeks ago, three weeks ago ish. And we were talking about just kind of overhead and where that goes and what we can be looking for, as we get bigger. Obviously there's a lot more moving, a lot more plates spinning, that we've got to keep track of. So talk a little bit about that. And then the last one would be kind of just how we view training. I think Chris and I started kind of our training academies are roughly about the same time ish. We'll call it kind of 2020 ish around there. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. I think the landscape has changed a touch from back during COVID when it was just hire as many people as you possibly could and how are we going to train them and so on and so forth. So I guess before we get started though, and Chris may or may not know that I heard this conversation. So we're at this roofing conference, we're at this dinner, and he ran into another gentleman who I believe was a veteran, maybe not, maybe had just done some, he was doing some mission work, like over in Iraq or Afghanistan, I can't remember, Afghanistan, somewhere like that. And I like overheard Chris telling these stories about kind of the military and his experience there and all of this stuff. And it just floored me. Like I was just like sitting there like, oh my God, like the things that our armed forces have to go through from training to actually being there and different stuff like that. And so I guess, Chris, the question I would ask you, because I know that there's a lot of people in the trades that are veterans and have served and all of that stuff. Like, What is you like from a leadership perspective? Like what did the military kind of teach you, or probably better said, like what are those things that like as you're going through your day to day and facing challenges that you like look back and like I remember where I learned that, like that was like a first, you know, that was my first introduction to that principle or whatever it was.
Yeah. It's a good question. Thanks for bringing that up. That's why I don't have any hair. Those 5 years in the Marine Corps. You know, I think a lot of veterans who transition, whether you're leading a business, whether you're a technician, I think a lot of people struggle with translating their like hard military skills into sort of this civilian career path, right? Because the reality is, like, I led interrogation teams and developed informants. That doesn't translate right into maybe an HR or something that translates. But I think the things that do translate really well, I mean, what are the things we want in our team members and our leaders and our business? We want people who are reliable, who freaking show up on time, who are prepared, who like want to execute at a high level, right? Who can communicate really well, right? Who can rally around like being part of a team and wanting to like deliver something that's, you know, deliver on something that's better than themselves, bigger than themselves. So I think people don't put enough emphasis on like a lot of the soft attributes that veterans learn being a part of that culture. And I think you should take a lot of pride in those things. Cause as we all know, leading businesses, sometimes it's hard to get people to do the basics, the showing up on time, right? The looking clean and presentable and shaving your face. But veterans seem to have a lot of that stuff dialed in, right? And I think that stuff, it matters tremendously, whether you're a leader in a business like ours, or whether you're a field pro out there, individual contributor, those skills are incredibly valuable no matter what role you're in.
Yeah, no, I think that's super insightful as far as like, how do we translate that? And I think that goes for not even military, but like, what are your other experiences? You know, we've all had instances where we brought someone from outside the industry. You know, that's kind of the big buzzword. Oh, you got to bring people from outside the industry. And it's like, well, what are the skills that we're actually looking that will translate really well? Like, yeah, you're smart, but like, what are the other things? I always look for me, it's like emotional IQ. Like, can you like get in a room, especially can you talk with maybe at a very high level, but then also sit down with a technician and relate with them and figure out what's going on, and they understand that you're there to help. And I think for me, that's been the biggest thing. I feel like people can either talk on one side of the fence or the other, and those people that can jump back and forth and have a conversation and be able to relate with people is hugely impactful.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think even if you're not in a leadership role, like even for our frontline team members, taking that same analogy about being able to communicate and sort of flex your style, same thing with customers, right? Like, how do you take something that's inherently complex and difficult, and how do you make sure that you're communicating in a way that they can understand? I mean, it's amazing. In 4 years in the Marine Corps, you get the experience that like some people don't get the chance to have until they're like in their 30s or 40s later in their career, right? You're leading teams, you're getting big budgets, a lot of pressure, you're responsible for gear that's really expensive. Like, those are just all things that a lot of people in other walks of life just don't get the opportunity to do, right? Where you could be leading a fire team of people and you're over in a combat zone and you're executing a mission and you've got sort of your own, all these different things people are relying on you to do. And I think it's just a great pressure test, right, for these young people. And I think you just get 10 years of experience in 4 years, right? And I think that's really useful for young.
So moral of the story is, don't hassle the Hoffman because he is certified badass. But it is, I love that. I always love, like, I love whenever you tell some of your stories from over there, at least some of the ones that I've heard. But you know, one thing we kind of skipped past, though, and all this stuff plays right into it. And that's, you know, you guys are both leading big businesses. But this discipline, like how you know, communication is key, making sure that you've got, you know, consistent communication across your team, your leaders, all the stuff, everybody's kind of marching to the beat of the same drum. Like, all these things are important as you're scaling these companies. And Chris, you've been scaling like crazy. Like, no matter what, every time I talk to you or we're all in our group chat or whatever, you're always talking about like these, you know, you just have this constant growth that's happening for you. And it's just like, you're in St. Louis, like, and you're in Nashville, St. Louis. But, you know, the biggest chunk of your business is there in Missouri, St. Louis. How the hell you keep scaling so much? Like, what? You weren't some miracle guy or some miracle company, but yet you continue to grow and people were, you know, and you kind of like just do your own thing. Like, for those who don't know, yes, we, you know, we have our peer group of guys, and Hoffman's like the rogue dude that does his own thing and just keeps destroying everybody. He's still a private, you know, privately held company, just doing his own thing. And I love this about you, dude, because you could, I don't think like, you, like nothing distracts you. You're just like fucking go mode constantly. But what are you doing, man? How the hell is Hoffman just keep scaling so much? What are you like, what is it that you're doing? Cause it's not some secret sauce.
You know, it's funny. The LinkedIn and Twitter posts, Chris, they make it all look great. You know, that's the beauty, you know, like any good business. If you look beneath the surface, it's controlled chaos, right? Like most businesses, but a couple of things. So actually, I got a call yesterday from a leader in one of the big consolidators who operates a lot of brands in the Midwest. And he was asking this question because they have a brand in St. Louis. And a lot of people are asking this question is like, how are you doing? Because they want to know, like, it's hard in some markets. People are still experiencing a lot of growth. In other markets, their brands are shrinking. Ooh. But so I got that call from a leader, another one of these home service consolidators. And he was asking, because we're all asking the same question. It's not useful for me to compare my business in St. Louis to somebody operating in Phoenix or Scottsdale or to somebody operating in Dallas. And say like, oh, well, they're growing and I'm not, right? Because there's different weather patterns, there's different economic conditions, all these things. And so it was, you know, and I share that because like St. Louis is a market that candidly population's not growing, right? That we have headwinds, right? It's complex. The licensing dynamics are a pain. And the reality is our St. Louis brand right now, year to date, is now only growing at upper single digits. Year over year, right? Which is not huge growth. We had a run where it was 7+ years of 30+% organic growth, right? But now that we've surpassed 100 million in that market, we've realized like we can't sustain 30% growth in a market like St. Louis. Once we're at this scale, 30% becomes a lot harder, right? To add a $30 million chunk to your business in a year. So that's part of the reason we went to Nashville. That's why we acquired in Denver. We got 130 team members up there. So we said, how do we get into these markets that have wind at our back where there's a ton of population growth, there's a lot of favorable dynamics in the market. And then as a small business, I think it's really easy to capture share, right? Stick out your elbows and compete against the guys that are there. And that's what we're doing. So we're getting the bulk of our growth now in markets like Nashville and in Denver and in roofing, where there, I think, a lot less sophistication among sort of the competitors in that world. So I think that's what's driving our big growth today organically. It's not our core Hoffman St. Louis brand. We've reached a point where I think that's going to be, we're going to hit singles and doubles in there, but that's not going to allow us to drive consistent double digit growth for years into the future.
Got it. So I actually forget that you're in Denver until you had just mentioned that, but when did you do that? Cause that was
October of last year. Yeah. Good business, 27 million, about 130 team members. Great, family owned operation and, looking for sort of that next transition. And, I've known them for 6 years. And so we connected, realized there was a ton of alignment, and that's a business where, my God, give me, you know, 2026. I think that business can, I think that can be a $40 or $50 million brand. So much opportunity, such an awesome brand. And we're excited to sort of bring a lot of our experience to bear on growing that business.
Is it multi-trade?
HVAC, plumbing, electrical. Yep.
Okay. The Holy Trinity.
Chris, when you go into these markets, and obviously the majority of listeners aren't buying a $27 million operation. They may be buying something smaller, whatever it may be. And so I think your advice can be, you know, maybe tailored to them. So let's just say you go in and you buy a $5 million business. Like, where are you looking when you say add value? I know we've talked about this, but yeah, like when you say, hey, when I'm looking at actually buying it, and then, you know, day one through, you know, 8-10 months down the road, like where does your team attack to drive value?
Well, I'll say this, the playbook's different with every business, because the reality is every business is going to have different needs. They're going to be strong in different areas, weak in other different areas. And so what we do, here's the approach we take. When we go to partner, we put together an integration team. So we say on our existing team, who are our rock stars and really great pros in our business that we can plug into this business in each of our different functional areas. We get somebody from marketing, somebody from the people team, right? We get somebody from accounting and finance. We get ops leaders. We now have created an ops and integration leader, both a VP and a director level leader who really drive a lot of this, a lot of the integration work. But they've got this integration team behind them. And then we're just so we plug into that business and we're there to learn initially. We try and do as much as we can during due diligence. We actually call due diligence Operation Head Start, right? We're getting in there and we're learning so that we know when we close, like, where are we starting to drive, where are we starting to like where's the rubber hit meeting the road and where we start to drive improvement right away. And sometimes we got to balance, because at the end of the day, you only got so many change points. I can't go into this business and blow up 100 things at once, right? So what that integration team does under the leadership of those ops and integration roles is they'll prioritize everything that they see that we might want to change, whether it's pay plans, whether it's our profit pricing method, whether it's installation or quality standards, or whether it's equipment pricing that we can go negotiate better, or whether it's their marketing team. Maybe they're not with Rhino, maybe they're with a worse agency, and we need to say, hey, we're going to take that over because we see bad results in the marketing bucket, or maybe it's call center ops. So we're looking at all those things, and we're just learning. And then once we've got that list of all the things that we say, man, we need to do some change here, we prioritize them on two dimensions. So each of those items, we say, if we fix that or change it, what is the impact of that change, right? And then the second dimension is, what is the effort required to deliver that change? So a good example is maybe equipment cost that's super high impact. In that case, we saved almost $1 million on day one just from our negotiated national equipment pricing. That was high impact, right? Immediate high impact we could push in place, and it was really low effort, right? So that's where we want to start, are the things that are high impact, low effort. And then we work our way down that list to the high impact but high effort stuff that's going to take a little bit heavier of a lift. But that's our methodology, and we got to bring the leaders and the team along with us, right? They have to see and understand that the reason we're driving these changes is not only to make the business better, but once the business is made better, we can drive improvements in their compensation and benefits. A good example of how that worked out, right, with Ferguson, they knew that we had free 100% paid health insurance at Hoffman Brothers for our team members. So nobody pays any premiums, almost $20,000 per employee we pay. So they really wanted that. So as we're driving all this change, asking them to do all these things differently, they were bought in because they said, hey, this business is going to stand by their commitment to invest in me. So here we are. We bought that business in August of 23, so almost 2 years later, and we've gone from a $12 million business to a $30 million business, doing $1.2 million on the bottom line to being able to do north of $3 million on the bottom line, and now they have free health insurance, right, is an example. So driving the change in how we do it's important, but also connecting the dots between why we're asking the team to do these changes and our ability to take better care of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's such a powerful point, is that, you know, it's always the, well, what's in it for them? Like, change is hard. Change is difficult on any level. But like, to your point, if there's something reciprocal, like, hey, we're going to do this for you. Yes, we know change is difficult. But at the end of the day, we've done this before. We have a pretty good idea that this will make everyone's lives better, you know. And I think, like, negotiating equipment. Well, the only way to pay for your health insurance, all of it, is to renegotiate our equipment pricing so that we have the dollars to actually pay towards health insurance, as opposed to 20% more on that furnace that we're putting in.
A question for you. You're talking about high impact, like high impact, high effort, high impact, low effort, like that whole like pecking order of things that you're accomplishing. Are you doing something like that, like in the main bit, like probably not like that, but some variation of that just in the main business too? Like, what's the frequency? Like, what are you doing? What's the frequency if you do that?
Yeah. Well, I think that lines up with our strategic planning process for our core businesses. So we have goals, which are sort of 3 to 5 year targets. And then we have strategies, which are like 1 year targets that are, and all of this cascades, right? So our strategies are aligned to our goals. And then we have initiatives that are aligned to those 1 year strategies. And initiatives are 3 to 6 months in length. And those are like must do, can't fail, project-based work that we're going to deliver. Like, an example is we have a price book overhaul that we're going through right now. And we have to get it right. We're improving the quality of descriptions, improving the photos that go in there. We're categorizing all of our tasks into low perceived value, medium perceived value, high perceived value. And then we have different billable hour rates associated with like the customer perception of value across those task codes. So whole price book overhaul. But that's an example of like a 3 to 6 month project with maybe there's a second phase or second project, depending on how we scope it. But yes, when we go through that strategic planning process and we're picking initiatives that are aligned to those strategies, our list of initiatives coming out of strategic planning, there were like 25 flipping things on there that we wanted to do. But the reality is I can't come into our team and say, we're doing these 25 things in Q1. So we only pick 5, right? And they're 3 to 6 months in length, those initiatives. And now they can vary by business. Some of them might be the same, like price book is affecting our whole footprint, but like Ferguson Roofing may have some different initiatives that aren't necessarily the same as Hoffman St. Louis, Hoffman Nashville, Blue Sky in Denver. But any business is not going to have more than 5. because we want to make sure that I think the trap that businesses fall in is they deliver a whole lot of stuff, but they do it all in a very mediocre way. And my approach now going into this year is the things we say we're going to deliver on, I want to pick less, but I want to deliver them in a very high quality, high impact way.
I think that makes a whole lot of sense. I'm going to ask a selfish question here because what you said just piques my interest because we've talked about this, but you framed it a hell of a lot better, which is usually the case. The high, medium, low perceived value with different billable rates. Tell us more.
Man, I should take this one offline. This is the secret that people are doing. Well, here's the reality, right? So we go to a customer's house and it's a customer supplied ceiling fan. Their perception of what they should be charged to hang the ceiling fan in a bedroom, right? Whatever it is different what they think they should be charged per hour for that task than what they think is reasonable to be charged to replace a whole electrical panel service entrance. Right? They perceive one as complex, can't mess it up. It affects the whole house. There's safety considerations. They perceive the other as, hey, I could find a guy on Craigslist and have him hang my fan. Right? And I don't want to chase off my customers by taking the same billable hour rate, the same rate that I charge for a panel, and apply that same billable hour rate to hanging a ceiling fan. So some of my task goes, the math we did is that my net price to the customers based on the weighted value of each of those task codes. So we did the math before, after these price shifts. We want the revenue to be the same, but now we're getting more revenue on high perceived value tasks, and we've accepted lower for low perceived value tasks because I'm trying to avoid price complaints too. I mean, that's part of what you get is if you go out to do those low value tasks and someone's, and then you might chase off customers because they may be like, oh, look what they charged me to replace this outlet cover. There's no way I'm going to charge them or ask them to do my panel. So it's kind of like, hey, we accept lower gross margins and lower values on these smaller task codes. But in return, we look to recoup that on the higher perceived value type work.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
100%. I mean, we looked at this. It was something that I looked at. I was like talking to customers. Every now and then I'll have like a customer complaint that I'll deal with. And I'm like, When you're sitting there going, oh shit, I don't know if I would pay that to do just something very simple. And it makes sense. Like that's how we've all been taught, right? Well, make sure your billable hours right. Make sure you cover overhead, so on and so forth. And I think that what you're doing, and we've done something similar, not to that degree, which I'm going to go back and take a look at, but like these lower things, like especially for your membership base, like you want them to think, ah, crap, I just call this guy and, you know, they'll take care of it. We just added to our membership free drain clearing across the board. I got the idea from Bancroft out at Morris Jenkins. And I was like, so tell me about this. He's like, well, like it's a great perk to the membership because everybody has a slow drain and not as many customers these days associate the regular maintenance on their HVAC system as value. So they're like, they're probably thinking, oh, I got to take a day off work. Like if it's working, it's working. I don't really give a shit, whatever. But everybody has a slow drain. And so we added that perk to the membership to, again, add value. It's a lower perceived kind of thing of like, oh, I kind of need this. And hell, I'll join the membership. I want to probably have you out twice a year to clear a drain. And we know that, you know, a lot of times you're just clearing a drain. There isn't a whole lot of like, you know, selling them extra stuff or whatever it is. It's like my sink's clogged in the bathroom. Please fix it. Thank you. Talk to you soon. Yeah. So I think that you're spot on with that. I think that's something that listeners can definitely take a lot away from, especially if you're getting like complaints on the pricing. Like, you know, you can only stand behind the cost of replacing the flapper for so long before you're like, that is a little salty, I think.
Yeah. Even like small ones, like smoke detector batteries, like just what's a flat, what are you charging? $50? You know, just like not a huge deal, but it's like a quick value add that you're in there with a homeowner. Maybe they're elderly. Maybe they can't access it. Just like, especially for your members. Yeah. Those are things that like we should just do when we're in the home and not try and charge the same billable hour rate. You know,
I can imagine right now people thinking, because you're basically talking what Tommy will say, long-term greedy. You're thinking like, hey, like I'm doing this right now because it's proving value. And then when it pops, they're going to be like, okay, these guys always took care of us. They didn't, right? Because So I can imagine people listening right now thinking, dear God, how am I going to figure out how to price change pricing on put, you know, installing an outlet or an outlet cover or a light cover. And by the way, I should know the answer to this because in Chad's room at Casa de Llano, I had to change out the light switch because he couldn't figure it out.
I slept one night with the lights on because I could not figure out how to turn the damn thing off.
Well, I had to take the childproofing off of the light switch for Chad to figure it out. Safe to say, Chad doesn't get too involved with the electrical side of Peterman Brothers.
That's right. Yeah. But I think to answer your question, I don't know how Chris would answer this, but like for me, it was literally just going through with my customer hat on. A great person to ask is your CFO. So like my CFO actually, unbeknownst to, or probably different from most, he's pretty handy. And like, so I just like started like asking him, like reading off the task and being like, would you pay for this? And he's like, hell no. I go, okay, well, that's a task right there. I said, okay, let's go to the next one. Would you pay this dollar amount for this task? Oh, absolutely not. Would you pay for this? Well, yeah, probably. I don't know how to do that thing, whatever it was. And I think really you can kind of almost dumb it down to a certain, I don't know how you guys went through the process, Chris, of kind of figuring out what tasks were, but that was a very simple way for me. I was like, yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We did that and we grabbed some non-technical people in our business and we gave them the description, what it was. And then the best way to do it, I think, is have like a field pro there who can also explain, because the reality, the perception of its value, think about it, not from us sitting in an office and reading the description. Think about it like you're sitting in the basement and you're with a customer and you're looking at the electrical panel and they're asking you about, oh, so you're going to do what to my panel to replace that breaker, right? Like think about the value that they're going to perceive through not only the description, but what the field pro is relaying to them. And so having the field pro there as you march through all the tasks to answer those questions and present what that looks like, then allows them to say low, medium, high. And so you go through, grab some people that aren't technical by background and go through that process. And it's not perfect, by the way. The other way, so after you built it and you put it in place and you're rolling it out and doing that work, then you can set like a good leading indicator for whether your pricing maybe is in the wrong bucket is your conversion rate. Are you seeing a lot of single tasks for one type of call that you're seeing you're converting really low and you're like, oh, shit, why am I trying to charge $280 to swap a light cover, you know, whatever it is.
Hey, I want to impress you guys real quick. Are you ready?
Oh boy.
That doesn't sound very encouraging, Chad. Since we're talking about electric, and I actually was thinking through this, I have my homeowner hat on. I'm thinking like, would I pay, you know, what would I pay to have somebody come and install a breaker in my house? This is like real life stuff that happened here at the Llano house. Okay. I go out to the garage and Mason's got his electric bike. My son's got his little electric bike plugged in. And I'm like, this thing's not charging. Like, what's going on? I'm like, wait a second. I'm trying to open the garage door. Garage door don't open. I'm like, what in the hell's going on? Like, that side of the garage doesn't work. Chris, the way my house is laid out, I've got, you know, two separate garages and, it wasn't working. So I was like, something's wrong. And I'm like, I'm looking for the GFI, you know, I'm like, oh, it's good to go. I'm like, oh, so it's gotta be a breaker problem. So I open up the old panel, you know, cause you know, I'm a troubleshooter, Chris. I go to the panel, open up, and the breaker's tripped and it won't reset. So I'm like, oh, bad breaker. Because, you know, I'm an electrician. So I'm like, this can't be that difficult to change a breaker. It's one wire. I'm like, so your boy said, I asked Jamie, I asked my assistant, I said, hey, we see what the, you know, they're going to charge us to come and swap out this breaker. Because, like, I don't want to deal with it. And it was like, $240 or something like that. And I was like, fuck that. I went to Ace Hardware. I bought the breaker. I came home. I undid it. I installed it, boom, popped it in. And it cost me what? $18, $20, whatever the hell it was. And so if they'd have come to me though and said, oh, this thing's going to cost you, you know, $100 to do it. I honestly probably wouldn't even, I'd just be like, yeah, it's fine. Cool. $100. You come and do it and change it. And I just saved myself 15 minutes. But the thought, you know, for me, it was like, $200 seems like a little aggressive, man, for it to swap out a breaker when it's literally you pop one wire out, you pop the wire out, put it in, pop the sucker back in. I mean, as long as you don't electrocute yourself, you're good to go. Like, I guess there's life at stake, you know, I guess if you don't know how to change a breaker, but.
Yeah. Yeah. The other layer of complexity I would add to price book that I think is useful, right? When you start playing the price book game on advanced mode beyond just flat rate, everything the same, billable hour rate, is like how you then construct your bundle pricing. So for example, if someone comes out and they're replacing their breaker, and we have to charge more for that first task code because like that's all the drive time, right? If we're just running around doing single task tickets, right? Then like that's not super efficient versus if I have an average task per call of 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7, whatever it is, then what I need to charge per billable hour per task goes lower. So having dynamic pricing that can allow your pricing rules to allow you, when you have those multiple tasks and bundle, allow that billable hour rate to come down, and then you'll get higher tickets. Because to your exact math, if you're already out there and you've done a repair, whatever it is, on a separate panel, and then you got a bad breaker, it's like, think of your time. It'll take that electrician 10 minutes, 5 minutes to pop in the new breaker. So you don't need to charge $280. You could charge $100, you know, whatever it is.
And I try to think through like, you know, because I'm in this business too, and I understand when you roll a truck costs money. Like, so I'm thinking about that, but I'm like, even at that, I'm like, shit, well, if he comes here, you better do something else. Like, that's where my head goes to. And like, okay, well, I know that I have this other outlet, you know, by the pool pump that needs to be replaced. So like, maybe let's have him change that one while we're here too. But if you start charging me the same billable hour, you know, to do those two simple tasks, now I feel gouged, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm never using this guy again.
Well, I think the good thing about, I mean, a ton of great price book stuff. I think more importantly, you know, what you said at the top, Cristiano, when talking about Anna taking over as president, I think what this conversation has lended itself to is Anna now knows as president where she can place your talents. And that may be the Rhino handyman instead of something maybe more a little bit more important. Right now, breaker comes up, bathroom needs clean, whatever it may be, she has her man in more ways than one.
Oh my God, Chad's got jokes.
Yeah. I know she doesn't listen, but if she does or happens to stumble upon this episode, you know, there's just a little tip.
That's right. This is going to be the one text message where he sends and he's like already got the video clipped right at this section.
Like, I've never gotten one of those from you. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Chad. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
He's really coming out of his shell. Should we transition? We're like a little over half hour into this thing. Should we transition into another topic, Chadrick?
Well, I mean, we haven't talked about any of the topics that I said we were going to talk about, but I think we've really dove into some really good stuff here. So that's good. You know, one of the ones was kind of busy season. Like when you think about going into busy season, primarily on HVAC, like what are you guys at Hoffman? Like, what are you thinking about? Obviously, probably an April and May kind of push to get everything situated. Like, what are some of the things you're thinking about that maybe others aren't thinking about as they go into this season?
Yeah. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, but I'll start with, it is really easy in like February, March, April, when things are slow, to like downsize your workforce, right? Cause that's super easy to get into that mindset. Like, on the contrary, I think that's the time where you lean in and try and pick up the best installers who maybe aren't getting work. And if you have to carry people that maybe aren't as productive as you would like them to be because you don't have the work, I think those costs that you incur by carrying maybe the right size team during the shoulder season, I think those costs are more than recouped by having the capacity you need when the weather turns, when summer hits. Now, that being said, I think some of the things we do to expand our capacity heading into summer that can help, a couple of things. So one, we have what's called like, this is a very tactical thing I think people could apply right away. We have what's called like a 6-day volunteer bonus. So say you're an install crew and you've already installed a system 5 days a week. If you volunteer for that 6th day on a Saturday, there's a significant spiff and incentive that goes to both the lead and the apprentice to then go and put in that additional system on a Saturday. And we call that, we call for that 6-day bonus, which is really lucrative for them. I think it's almost like $300 per guy, plus they're getting time and a half. So these are like $1,000 plus earning days for them, each, like the installer and the apprentice. But for them, that's great. And we bite off, we do that when I see we're like 2 or 3 days backlogged. I activate that 6-day bonus, try and bite that back, keep that backlog as low as you can when the weather turns. And then the second thing we do is we prepare what's called flex crews. So I have my service department's a lot bigger, right? And the reality is we also put in place blackout days for maintenances. So we won't run low priority functioning maintenances during certain peak months when the weather changes. We just say we're making room for just demand. And then the other thing we do is we activate these flex crews where we've cross-trained some of our service pros who were a lot of them former installers, and we'll provide an incentive for them to do this to then form 2-person flex crews that then if we're at, say, 15 crews in St. Louis, I can flex up to 20 crews by putting 10 service pros together when my backlog gets backed up. And the reason I really like flex crews is it's I don't have to carry those extra install crews all year, like because the shoulder season gets painful if I have 25 crews in the shoulder season, even though I can keep them busy during summer. I don't want that in February, but having the flex crews where I can take folks and mobilize them into additional crews is a great way to keep that backlog bitten down. And at the end of the day, two service guys putting in an install a system for 15 grand is going to be more revenue and a better outcome than the revenue the two service guys generate running calls in a day.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I would think one of the things that we actually just ran across is we staff up for summer. I was having a conversation with our service manager here in Indy, and you know, we were talking about like, hey, we're going to go find you like three or four more techs right before the busy season hits. I want to get three or four. And his response was, well, explain that to me, because like right now we're, you know, it's mild-ish. It's beautiful out, 75 and sunny, but it's going to get up into the 80s next week. And the one thing that I think is important for either the business owner or your service manager to understand is we know that we're going to be busier, but his comment was, well, we already have more than we had last year, so aren't we good for growth? And what I explained to him is I was like, the one thing that you never see is you don't see all the calls that we didn't book because we couldn't get there in time. And he's like, oh, I've never really even thought about that. I was like, yeah, you think you're busy right now because one, we're only our capacity states, you know, it's reflective of how much staffing we have. And yes, if we add two technicians, that's another, you know, 8 to 10 calls that we can run a day, which is great. But what I told him is I go, I'm looking at all of our missed opportunities where someone wanted me there either today and we couldn't get there because we were full. And when I'm looking at that in 75 degree weather, I'm saying, hey, there's more demand on the horizon that's going to be there that a lot of your frontline managers have no idea is there. But you do. You realize that, hey, we don't even have to spend another dime in marketing. I just have to have the capacity to go handle this in a timely manner. And that was like eye-opening to him. He's like, oh, I didn't even think about that. And nor should he. It's not like he has, you know, purview into the call center and what we're not booking and different stuff like that. But it was kind of a good lesson. And I've decided that next Tuesday, we're going to talk about this and like give people a bigger scope of here's how the business kind of works and here's where we're missing out and here's why we're scaling up and so on and so forth. Cause I think sometimes managers can feel like, oh shit, he's just adding a bunch of people to me that I got to go take care of and this, that, and the other. And what am I going to do? And yeah, I want to hit my budget, but I think I can hit my budget here. And it's like, dude, throw your budget out the window. Like if there are calls to be ran, let's go run them and we'll just blow the budget out the water.
I think you raise a really good point. And I think like, naturally, my install leaders, like they love it when there's a 2-3-4 day backlog.
Oh, yeah.
Let them like get their equipment ordered, be in their groove. You know, that's got like no urgency to like get the next one set up the next day. But to your point, like if you can maintain, you know, Nexstar talks about this next day availability. It is super hard, but that's why like with the flex crews and the 6 day bonus, like we try and bite down that backlog as soon as we can. Because to your point, Chad, if you can say, if you're in a customer's home and they don't have HVAC, and it's like, you can say, oh, I can put this in tomorrow and it's 100 degrees outside. Like that's going to be a very different closing rate than if you say, I can put it in 3 days or yep. 4 days. Like 3 days with no AC in July in St. Louis is going to be a problem, yep. Right? But I think to your point, there's that hidden demand where if you're at next day, right, if you have that extra capacity, I think you're going to win those marginal jobs that you would otherwise be 2-5 days out on.
Yeah. So one thing that here's another tip for listeners, just to kind of piggyback on this. So this is something I learned from Dave Geiger. I was out at his shop. It's been a couple of years ago now at this point, but I was out there and they were running this thing. Like I saw on their like website and on their ads, they're like next day install guaranteed. And that was the first question I asked him. I was like, Dave, tell me a little bit about this. Like there's no way that I know you've been in this business a long time. I know you're super smart, but there's no way that you have gauged how much capacity you need to put in one every day the next day. He goes, yeah, but it gets us in a hell of a lot more homes when customers think that we can. And oftentimes we can put it in next day, But he's like, if we don't, then we just give him a discount. Like, okay, we already got in the home. We won the job. I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Customer. We are completely jam-packed for tomorrow. What if I take a little bit of money off this job and we'll put it in the next day? Well, they're getting something for it. You're getting in the door of a job that you typically wouldn't have got into. So we run that all year long, like even in the summertime, like it's next day guaranteed. And if we don't, then we'll give the customer like $500. Okay, here you go. We'll take this off the job. At the end of the day, what's it to us? We got another job on the board. We book it. We're ready to roll.
I really like that. Yeah.
Just bring in a couple oscillating fans.
Yeah.
Just blow the humidity all around there. Yeah. Mrs. Jones, what do you want? Huh? Here's an oscillating fan. Bring in two.
And at the end of the day, if you can get in the door, you got to think too, your competition is in the same predicament. And as you get bigger, they're in a lot worse predicament than you are. They're booked out. If you're booked out 3 days in St. Louis, they're booked out 3 weeks. And so if I can just get in there and I can put you in 3 days, not next day, then I still win the work, as opposed to, well, I'm not looking anymore because I'm already on the schedule. And I guess I've, you know, come to grips with the fact I'm going to have to wait 3 weeks to get this damn thing put in.
Hey, so when you're carrying the teams before you get into the busy season, waiting for it to come, is that the time when you guys are, this is probably for both you two. Is that the time when you guys are starting to like double down on some training and stuff like that? Like in that slower period, are you playing it that way? So they're not just kind of sitting there like twiddling their thumbs, or you're sending them home or whatever. Like, what are you guys doing to offset that?
We'll do a couple things. One, like it's just, I kind of think of it like I want a minimum floor for hours that we're going to get. It's probably not going to be 40 hours, but maybe it's 30, right? When we get in that shoulder season with them. The other thing, so absolutely, yes, run training. The other thing we'll do is take our HVAC field pros that have extra capacity in the shoulder season, the installers, and cross-train them to run maintenances on functioning less than five-year-old systems, right? Because that's where things are not going to be broken. Heck, have them do it on ones that you installed, because then they're going out and running the maintenance on the systems that they've installed that we know where it was done right, right? So they're not worried about troubleshooting, and it's something where they just made a buying decision, so there's not like opportunities to upsell as many accessories or other things. So cross-train them, have them focus on less than five-year-old functioning systems that you installed. And then that gets them hours too, where they're also revenue producing.
Yeah. So we do ours. We used to do ours where we did that very same thing. We did training. We still do, obviously, training. We don't do the cross training thing, but I wrote that down because I really like that, especially for like apprentices who may one day want to get into service anyway. It's like, all right, let me take you in. And I like your idea of doing it on the equipment you installed. Is they put the shit in, and it's the brand of equipment that they work on every single day. Like, they should know what's going on there. What we pivoted to here at the beginning of the year is we pivoted to a new pay plan. And so that pay plan essentially pays the installer and the apprentice a percentage of the job that they install. So my guys can make probably 30 to 40% more than they could on hourly by just installing like 3 days a week. And what it's done is it's helped level out our labor. So like, we would see labor swings, you know, in the summer when you're full tilt and running, your labor's running really low. But in the off season, you're just eating it. You're up 12, 13% labor on installs because you don't have the revenue to cover it. So what our thesis is on this is, if I can pay you more per job, you're going to make more in the summer, which you're going to hopefully look back and say, when you're a little bit slower and you only work maybe 2 days a week in September, well, shoot, I've got all this money that I made during the summer when the getting was good, and so on and so forth. And I think that we tried to do that on hourly, but the hard part was like, well, I was still banking on working 40 hours a week every week for the full year, even though they've been in the business. And it's like, well, why don't we just shift this to where we just pay them a percentage of the job? Like, I've got guys that, you know, installers that will make very, very good money. I've had guys that were trainers or field supervisors go back into the field. They're like, hold on a second. Like, I know how to put this stuff better than anybody on our damn team. I'm just going to go do this and make a ton of money. Like, the heavy lifting isn't that big of a deal. I'm going to go make it while I can. So that helps in the slow season when you don't feel the guys don't feel it as much because hopefully now there's some financial training that goes into this. But hopefully they've made more money than they ever would have in the busy season. And now in the slower season, they're like, oh, this is great. You know, the weather's nice. I'm, you know, hanging out with the kids or doing whatever, taking care of stuff around the house, whatever it may be. So that's something that we pivoted to. I got, again, you'll see a common theme. I got that from Jonathan out at Morris Jenkins. I was like, how do you pay these guys? Like, how are you able to staff for this? And he told me about this pay plan and we moved to it. And we're still, you know, this is month 5 of it, but we haven't had really any complaints. It's helped in recruiting because guys can see, like, it's easy to map, like pencil, like, hey, if you work 3 days a week, our average ticket is, you know, 12.5. That's this percentage of the job. If you put in 3 jobs a week, this is how much you're making. And they're like, oh, what? I'm like, yeah, it works for me, but I'm not paying you when, you know, I don't have work.
I really like that. The other thing I really like about that is the incentive to get the job done faster, right? I think when you pay hourly, right, there's really no incentive to get it. If you have a 2-day job and you think you can get it done in one, like why? Right. Yep. You just gotta bust your tail for it. Whereas if it's summer and you've got a backlog and someone sees a 2-day job, they can get it done in one. And if they get it done in one, they're still getting paid the same as they were going to get if they got it done in 2. I remember when you were telling me this, Chad, when we were in New York together, but my gears were clicking. I sent an email to the team with your plan, but I like it for that reason. That's one of the bigger motivators to me is like, if you pay hourly, you get hours, right? If you pay on that sort of percentage of the job, you're going to have people that want to get jobs done. Right? Yep. You're going to get jobs.
Yeah. And it's worked for us on 2 sides of the coin. So that exactly. So I actually just heard an example from our install manager that like one of our trainers went back in the field. He put in 2 complete systems last Friday and was still done by like 6-7 o'clock at night and was happy as a hog. He's like, he put in like over $100,000 worth of equipment in a week. And he made, I think he makes like 6% on that job. He's like, dude, all day long. And the other caveat or the other piece of that puzzle that we looked to solve was warranty recalls. And so what we do is if you make a certain percentage, we hold back a percentage for 60 days. So you get, if you made 6, we pay you 4, we hold back 2 for 60 days. And then at 60 days, if there hasn't been a warranty or recall on that job, then you get your extra kicker on that job. So what we've seen is recalls and warranties have went down because they're like, hold on a second. I've got money tied to that I'm going to be getting. So I want to make sure that this is done right. So yes, I want to do it efficiently and I want to get it done fast, but I also want to make sure all my T's are crossed and my I's are dotted because I want that extra 2% there. I mean, I've got an installer. I think he said this week that we will pay him like $9,000, like for the work that he did, plus his like bonus kicker from because he didn't have any warranties or recalls. And like, I'm thinking about this install and I'm like, this dude has got to be on cloud freaking 9. Like, hey, honey, look what I found right before Mother's Day. Look at me. I got this.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. That's awesome.
Is that common? Is that very common?
What?
To do that holdback like that?
I'm not sure if it's I can't remember if Jonathan does the holdback or not, but that was like, I think he does because I think I just took what he did. I mean, let's not change it. He knows what he's doing. But yeah, I think that or they had like a piece, there's different ways to track it. Like I know some people who will, like if there's a warranty or recall, they'll charge them like $100 per recall. So like if you had a recall, then like you may see your check less. You know, if you had 2 recalls, less $200 for that recall. We found that way a little bit difficult because like, well, who's in charge? Was it the apprentice? Was it the lead guy? And so right now it's just like, hey, lead guy, your apprentice is your responsibility. If, you know, if it was having something to do with the outdoor unit and he said it and all this stuff, well, you should have checked over his work. You should have made sure it was good, whatever it may be. So I'm not sure if it's super common, but it's worked. I mean, there again, we're 5 months in, so let's take it with a grain of salt. But at the end of the day, I think our installers are happier than they've ever been. They're making more money. We're getting more jobs done. And, you know, I think the only thing that we haven't seen, and this just may be from switching over to the program, I think we'll see it in time. We haven't seen the urgency for guys to volunteer. like, ooh, I want to go get another job. Like, there's some that get it, but not everybody. And I think that's somewhat of a, like a generational thing. I mean, we've all dealt with whatever generation they are. Z, is that what they are? The 20 to 25 year old, like they value their free time a hell of a lot more than they value like going and do it. Like, I'm going to work, but I value my free time more, which is fine. Whatever. It is who we are. Install is a young man's game. So we're going to have to adapt to what the young man wants. That is for sure.
I'll not be doing installs anytime soon. So even though I have hard work. High IQ on my electrical skills, HVAC installations is not on that list. So, you know, the podcast goes so much better when it's just you two talking. And I just listen. This was great. Like, this last little 15-minute stint is like a dream. Like, you guys were on one. That was great. And for the listeners, that's pretty much how our conversations go. At least, you know, when we're talking about business.
Yeah. No, and the best part is Chris and I have been together for shit. We were in New York together. We've had like our own. The weird part, the funny part is like there were other people that were supposed to, well, you were supposed to come to Dallas.
Right.
Aaron was supposed to come to New York, and it just ended up being me and Chris, and we had a ball. We were just hanging out. We were working out together, hanging out, talking. It was great.
I mean,
our workouts are now like walking on the treadmill after doing.
Yeah,
like
we're old. But walking on the treadmill turns to one person pulls an earbud out. Hey, I got a question for you. And then an hour later, we're like, yeah, okay, well, I think we're done with our workout. We got some work done too. This is good.
At this stage, I don't think I can run and talk. You know, that wouldn't go well.
Absolutely not.
Not very well. Hey, when you guys were down in, Texas for that, roofing event with Transform and Ryan Groth, you were on one of the panels with Tommy. Were you? I think I saw you on a panel with Tommy. You guys were on some panels with Tommy. And then Chet, were you two on a panel together too, or no?
No, we both spoke individually, and then we were each on a different panel.
Different panels. Okay. One, was there much? Was there like, because though it's, you know, typically a roofing conference, was there much like other home service guys there that you guys ran into, or was it pretty much all roofing people?
I think it was mostly roofing. Yeah, mostly roofing. My vibe was it was mostly roofing.
That's pretty much what that group goes after is roofing. But I knew he was trying to bring in some more, you know, home service. He's trying to like break his way in there a little bit and know how well it would go. Ryan's a super sharp dude. I think the world of him. He's a good dude. Good guy, Ryan Groth. Owns Sales Transformation Group. Some of you guys have been heard of him. We have some roofers that listen to this. I just was curious, like, was there something down there that you guys were able to take away from that you heard that was like, oh shit, maybe I should consider that in our business? I mean, I don't know what it would be, but was there any sort of like takeaway from that event that, you know, that you guys, like, that was a discussion or anything like that? In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp, deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
By now, you've probably heard how much of a proponent I am for BlueOn, but I'm not the only one. When you talk to service managers using BlueOn, the stories all sound very familiar. Nick Christensen over at Herbal Heating says his team saved 46 hours in just the first month. Between the parts lookup, wiring diagrams, and AI troubleshooting, his techs are solving issues faster and ordering the right part the first time. It's even streamlined communications between the techs and the parts department. They just screenshot over the right part from BlueOn and send it over. It's simple, it's accurate, and it works. And yeah, Peterman Brothers is definitely seeing that impact too. Do yourself a favor, click the link in the description and book a quick demo to see it in action.
My thought, like I left there realizing it's a different business. And I realize there's a lot I don't know about roofing, right? Where like, you know, when it comes to HVAC plumbing electrical, I feel like I got the playbook, we're fine tuning, we got it dialed in. Like even like door knocking, like we had this perception where it was like, oh no, we're just going to be a retail inbound demand, like kind of like we were above door knocking. And then I hear some people like, no, that we should totally be door knocking. And they explain this honey hole method and how to do it in a good way. And I'm like, we're doing this all wrong. We should absolutely be door knocking. And there's people that are, one of the guys I talked to went from like 5 million to 50 million in like 30 months. And like he had a door knocking operation. And I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
We need to start knocking on doors.
Weirdly, that was the one thing that like I've been so curious about. Like my team hates me because I'm like, hey, I got this great idea. Like, I think we're going to like knock doors and we're going to create this team and it's going to be wild. And they're like, you have literally lost your mind. And I'm like, no, it works in roofing. And like, that was, we had dinner with Ryan, one of the nights, and, we were talking about this and like going into it and my wheels were turning. I'm sure like Chris's were as well. It's like, okay, hold on a second. Like, I think I can figure this out. And like, I've talked to ever since I've like thought like, oh, this is a great idea to produce cheap leads or cheaper leads. They still cost money. But, you know, like I've just thought about like, I know that I can't remember his name, but he's out in California and he started like a plumbing water quality business and all they do is door knock. And, you know, I've met with like painters here in Indy that are doing like 9 million of revenue just painting. And I'm like, well, how do you produce your leads? And like, we just knock on doors. And I'm like, well, that seems super simple. Why are we making this so difficult? I'm like, there's got to be a way to figure it out. So that was one of the takeaways. I mean, you know, I'm with Chris. Like, it's just there's a lot of different things, but there's also a lot of similar things, I feel like, within the two. But it is definitely behind HVAC plumbing and electrical. And I think that's why it's so smart what Chris has done is like, hey, let's take all this stuff that we've worked so hard on and just sprinkle it on a roofing company. And oh, look at us compared to all our competition.
The other thing I would add, I totally agree. And I was looking at I was trying to find my notes. I sent a bunch of notes to myself with all the stuff. The other thing I'd like, you know, for the greenfield in roofing, it's just so much more attractive. The greenfield and HVAC plumbing electrical with inbound demand, like the traditional method, without sort of the storm events at your back, that's just hard. I mean, to get to where we are today, we're like just now cash flow positive in that market. Always been positive gross margin, but we had to build a big overhead body. You're buying market share. Your marketing as a percent of gross revenues was too high initially because you don't have any revenues when you start. So we're $5+ million cash out to get into Nashville. And like, I look at a roofing and I'm like, oh my God, the infrastructure investment needed is so much less. It's just marketing, sales, and then you need a production management function, which you can centralize, right? And then you just need a network of independent contractors, high quality independent contractors. So it's like a totally different ballgame. And even Veritex, right? Who's the sister company of Apex, probably one of the biggest roofing consolidators to date. One of their senior leaders told me they were greenfielding 12 roofing brands at once, right? Which nobody was doing that in HVAC. Why can you do that in roofing? It's a different game. And I think that's like super exciting and attractive. And our gears right now in the middle of 2025, we're sitting here asking that question around, should we reprioritize our growth strategies and should we shift greenfield and roofing a little bit higher in our stack?
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. I mean, I think the issues that we run into in our greenfield locations is finding talent. Like, you've got to find an HVAC tech. You've got to find a plumber, an electrician, an install crew. You got to find all these things. Where in roofing, I just got to find sales guys. Like, and like from a back office, like I can do that centralized really damn easily. And then to your point, I find a production manager. We've got the crews. Go sell roofs, spend the money on marketing and let her rip. Like, yeah, I mean, I think greenfield and roofing, like, whew, you could do that all damn day long. And it would be pretty, pretty seamless. I think the Vertex, the biggest piece that I took away from them that I was like so jealous of is they're like, yeah, we've created a university for training salespeople. And I'm like, well, that seems a hell of a lot easier than training technicians to work on a piece of equipment that is different in every application. Like a salesperson, here's what you're going to do. This is great. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of runway there for sure.
If anybody's listening from Vertex, please send me a copy of your curriculum. Chad and I would love to take a look at it. And we'll give you our opinions too.
Yeah, exactly. We're here for feedback alone. And you know, we may rebrand it and use it. So we'll see how that goes.
I mean, we got some room at Peterman Brothers. There's a good training facility there that we can, you know, we'll go ahead and give it a go. We'll give it the old call. Right. See if we can make it work. If it works for us, then you know, you've got something good, Vertex.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, boys, listen, we are over an hour into this thing. Okay. We're having a good time. I can see, you know, Chris's face is getting a little red, head's a little shiny, got a little sweat going. Chad's on one right now. It's because he's not drinking Mountain Dew today. Excuse me. Diet Mountain Dew.
That's right.
Today.
Got to keep it. I don't know what. Keep it trim.
I don't know what's
summer's coming.
Summer's a coming. The old summer dad, Chad bod. He's got to get working
on
it.
That's right.
Well, boys, always fun, man. I appreciate it. Hey, Hoffman, I'm glad we made this happen. Like I always like whenever I can just text you randomly and you're like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm glad we didn't have to move it because I wanted to do it today. So, but I appreciate you boys coming on here and just, you know, just shooting the shit. You know, we actually covered quite a bit of stuff from the high impact, high effort, you know, conversation to the six day bonus. The flex crews, adjusted billable hours. We've learned that I am, if anybody is looking for a electrician in the Phoenix market, I am available part-time. You know, as long as it's a flex schedule, I can probably make it work. And also, most importantly is, Hoffman, why are you fucking laughing, dude? Like, I'm skilled labor, bro.
I believe in you. I believe in you.
I'm going to share one quick story to let you guys laugh at me, okay? Because I feel like you deserve this. Because I pick on everybody so much. Previous house I was in. Chad, did you ever go to my other house? No. Okay.
No.
So we built a pergola back there and I was like, I'm going to wire this one. Like the pool panel was maybe 30 feet away. Okay. So like, I'm going to wire this one. So I run into the little trencher, you know, a little stinger thingy. I'm out there trenching it. And I'm running the pipe. I'm pulling the wire. I got my little junction box. I'm putting the TV in there, a fireplace, you know, the ceiling fans, all the lights. Like, I pulled the wrong size wire. I wired it all myself with the wrong gauge wire. So I ended up having to hire an electrician to come and yank it all out and listen to that dude talk shit about the electrician that did the job.
You didn't tell him. You sat there and literally.
One me.
I was just like, that was the one time the billable hours. I was just like, yeah, it's okay, man. Whatever. I was like, please just don't tell my wife.
Yeah. Actually just work. Please hurry up and get out of here before Anna comes home.
I was like, why is this thing keep? Why does the breaker keep popping? What the hell's going on? And then he's like, I used PVC when I should have used fucking EMT or the metal pipe, whatever it was. I was like, oh shit. So. Maybe if you're listening and need a electrician in Phoenix, maybe don't consider me. Okay. I should just stick to my job.
Yeah. Here. He's just the breaker guy. If you need a breaker replaced, he can do it. Other than that, he's not going to work.
An outlet. If it's like a 110 switch, simple on and off, and it doesn't have to connect to something else. I'm your guy, you know, just give me a call. I'll do it. I don't want nothing to do with ceiling fans like that stuff. You got to hold that thing up there and hang it. I ain't doing any of that stuff. But Hoffman, real talk, you know, for years you've missed years. That's more than one.
Keeps having kids.
Rhino X, because you just keep pumping out babies. Okay. What I feel like Rhino X 2026 is going to have to be in the end of February. That's, it seems to be what works best. But I'm going to reach out to you specifically to look at your calendar to make sure that I pick a date that you are actually available.
Okay? I want to know because I've been blocking everything. I got freedom blocked on the calendar this year, so I'm going to be there. I know I missed that twice.
God.
But right now, nobody's pregnant. So yeah. If you're looking at February, we should be good.
Chris, Yana, if we can clear July, I'm looking at my calendar here. We got to be able to clear July and you should be good for February. that's 9 months away. So once we're in July, I think you can pick a date and we'll know he's going to be good.
So if I can just go and get that place now, maybe you'll be a little bit thoughtful with your extracurricular activity. you can make Rhino X 2026.
That's the debate. I want to keep going, but my wife's holding the line here. So.
Building his own army. Well, listen, you got that farm. You're going to need a lot of hands, dude.
That's
take
right.
care of that damn thing. All right, boys. Listen, I know it's kind of getting a little bit later on the East Coast. I appreciate you guys. This was fun. We got to keep doing stuff like this. Getting the group. We got to do another one with our whole crew again. That was fun. That was a good time. So, you know, to our listeners, like, this is the stuff I love you being able to hear is, like, you know, we're all buddies. We're all running businesses and we all get to have these conversations and have fun with it. And so this is just another little glimpse into like what our, you know, text groups and our conversations look like, but you always find a lot of good shit out of this stuff too. So, and even like every once in a while, even Chad puts in something that's smart.
Yeah.
Something good. And he made fun of me today. He made fun of me today.
I thought he gave me a compliment.
Yeah, I don't know that I took that as a compliment, but I appreciated the joke. It was the effort that matters, right? That was one of the things that, you know, the two dimensions that, you know, Hop was talking about was impact and effort. And you definitely did both of those things in that comment. So thank you. That brings it full circle. All right, boys. We're going to check out of here. Chad, you want to close this out, buddy? Because you're so good at, or maybe we should, Hoffman's going to fuck it up. We better just let Chad close it out.
Yeah. So I think in closing out, I mean, a lot of great stuff here, especially as gearing up for the busy season. I think a lot of great ideas. You know, if you've got questions, again, I think the biggest thing, if you're looking to grow and you want to, you know, you want to make improvements, while some of the ideas that we talked about may be like, well, there's no way that we could do this, there's a way. Like, you just have to think a little bit outside the box and you can make it happen. But, you know, how can you incentivize your team to help you grow your capacity? I think that's the biggest thing. Chris talked about it. That's what we've done with our install comp, is like, how do we incentivize guys to want to do that? And I think if you can set yourself up for success for the busy season, you know, obviously we know a lot of money is made in June and July and August, hopefully September. That'd be great. We'll hold out for some warm weather. But again, as my good friend, well, I got two Chris's on here. I keeps getting weird because I'm like, oh, Chris, who's Chris? But as my good friend Chris says, you don't got to do everything, but you got to do something. No, 0 days.